All right, good afternoon, everybody. It's Thursday, August 28th, and this is the East County Board of Zoning Adjustments. We're going to call it to order. And Damon, you want to do a roll call?
Chair Souza.
Here.
Vice Chair Imhoff is absent. Member Eddy, here. Okay. Yeah, quorum.
Thank you. So let's go ahead and do Pledge of Allegiance. Is there a person going to fake it?
I think we have one coming up.
Oh, he's coming up. Okay,
Yeah.
thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
I pledge allegiance
To
to the
the
flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. All right. Now we're in an open forum. So this would be a time for anybody who would like to speak for items that are not on the agenda. Anybody in the room? Seeing none. And Damien? Anybody online?
Yeah, no attendee online has their hand raised to speak with you. If you do wish to speak, you can raise your hand through the Zoom function at the bottom of your screen.
So you're not seeing any?
No hands raised.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to the field trip report.
There is no field trip report for this meeting.
Okay, thank you. So then moving on to item F, which is the Neighborhood Preservation Zoning Ordinance Abatement.
Yes, for this the first item on 9782 Flynn Road South, have Officer Michael Peters present.
Good afternoon, Chair Souza and Member Eddy. My name is Michael Peters with Alameda County Code Enforcement. This case is in regard to the property located at 8777 Lupin Way, Livermore, California, 94550, APN number 099-1650-004-02, in violation of Alameda County Neighborhood Preservation Ordinance 6.65.030A, 1 and 3 in parentheses, E2 in parentheses, B6 in parentheses, and Alameda County Zoning Ordinance 17.06, 17.52.210, and Junk Vehicle Ordinance 6.48. Utilizing the property as an outdoor storage yard facility, inoperable vehicles parked on unimproved surfaces. We've been here a couple times concerning this matter. So the case started in April 19th of 2022. And I'll fast forward to where we were last hearing. And that was staff conducted, January 12th, 2024. Staff conducted a site visit. The violations were still present. It appears some vehicles are still inoperative and parked on unapproved surfaces. After an inquiry of county planning and building departments, no plans or permits have been submitted or issued. February 15th, 2024, East County Board, after discussing and deliberating, decided to continue the matter for 90 days. On May 9th, 2024, staff conducted a site visit. The violations were still present. It appears some of the vehicles are inoperable and parked on unimproved surfaces. After inquiry with the planning department, the building departments, no plans had been submitted. Fast forward a little farther. On January 23rd, the Board of Zoning Adjustments, after discussing and deliberating, decided to continue the matter for 180 days. On August 19th, 2025, staff prepared and mailed a notice of administrative hearing for the mailing address and the property address by regular and certified mail. On August 19th, 2025, staff conducted a site visit. The violations were still present. It appears some of the vehicles are still inoperative and parked on unapproved surfaces. After an inquiry of county planning and building departments, no plans or permits have been submitted or issued. At the last hearing, the motion was to require the appellant to submit a detailed plan, timeline, and project completion and building permit within 180 days. I received a call yesterday from the appellant, and she said that she had submitted plans, and they do have a RQ number for plans submitted to the planning department. Their previous violations, yes. On October 28, 2016, they had the vehicles. Contact with the property owner, yes. The property is not vacant. Staff's recommendation is to deny the appeal. Deny the appeal, and if the property is in violation of Alameda County Neighborhood Preservation Ordinance and Junk Vehicle Ordinance and Zoning Ordinance, therefore a public nuisance and require abatement within 10 days and or commence fines and fees.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you change your recommendation based on the fact you now know that they required a permit or are asking for a permit?
No, because they were required to get a building permit within 180 days and they still haven't gotten the building permit. So our staff recommendation remains to be the same.
Okay, thank you.
And what do the fines look like? What are we looking at for?
Well, because we had postponed it or continued it, they have a zoning violation of $250, a reinspection fee, and a admin fee. I can have those up for you real quick. It's about So that's $711.
Thank you.
And then would that be one-time fee and then reoccurring? How's it reoccur if it's not?
Yes, each time we go back, we add to the zoning penalties, fines, and fees.
Yes.
Yeah, they escalate from $250 to $500 to $1,000 to $1,500. We're not going to retroactively go back unless that's what you request.
So just for clarification, it would be $711, and then would be a bi-weekly, monthly?
It's monthly.
How does this work? Monthly?
Yes, monthly.
So they'd have basically 30 days to fix the...
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. There's no other questions from us. Let's go ahead and open it up for public comment. Is there anybody online?
There is no one online wishes to speak with their hands raised.
Okay.
If you are online and you would wish to speak, you can raise your hand using the function on the bottom of the Zoom.
We do have a couple cards from folks here today. So Ray,
yes.
Would you like to address this?
Yes. That's right. Yes, hi, my name is Ray Corbani, living at 9007 Griffin Way. I was here during the last meeting and raised my concern. Realistically, I'm not here again to pick up on the neighbor or anything. My main question is, where is the county enforcement in this whole thing? I remember I had this issue with one of my neighbors, which was very minor. The county came, send me a letter. They said, you need to correct it, and I corrected it within the allowable time. But this thing is going on and on and on. I asked the respectable members, just come and take a view from my property. And look at all the cars that are just in plain view, very ugly thing. I mean, we all live, we want to keep it clean, we want to keep it organized. You could come and look at my place. I have nothing to hide. You know, all I'm asking is I don't want to see it. That's all I'm asking. And if they're putting up a building, how big of the building is going to go there to put all these cars in there? Or all these, they're not even movable cars. I remember one time the county came, the members came for another issue on my property, and there was only two cars parked on the dirt, and they asked me to put gravel underneath it, and I complied. Now, all this 7-acre property, you could just come and just look at the magnitude of it, and which I don't care, that's county. All I'm asking is please preserve my view. That's all I'm asking, based on the county regulations. That's all I'm asking. Now, any which way that is done, I don't want to take it out with them. I have no beef with them. I understand they're in business, whatever. They want to restore cars. They want to run a business out of it. I really don't want to get into that. That's between the county, what's on the book and what needs to be enforced. If there's law and regulations involved here. If there is, then okay, well, just tell me, just go sit down. You know, they could do whatever they feel like doing, and you just find them every 3 months. And how long are we going to live? 3 months, 3 months, 3 months. I mean, this thing has been going on for 3 years. And so much has been put up there, which is fine. I just don't want to see it. That's all I'm asking. I don't want to see it. They need to remove it, put it in a shed, somewhere, put it out of my sight. That's all I'm asking. And please, please, if you have any chance, come and look for yourself. That's all I'm asking. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Let's see, the next speaker in the room, is that Jenny?
So everything has, the permits have been submitted online, for the permits as well as for the plans for the carport. I'm also, I also just got plans for a building, which I would like to put further down the line. But I mean, we've paved our driveway like you guys have wanted before. We have a lot of gravel out there like you guys have wanted before. I know we discussed previously that there were some cars along the fence that were okay to leave, but the other ones are parked on gravel as you guys have requested for us to do. So I wasn't at the last meeting. I started work now, but from what I understood, as long as the permits and everything were applied for and filed for within the whatever time frame that you had given AJ, I thought that we were still in compliance. So we are moving forward and trying to get everything all cleaned up, and we don't have these problems anymore because I'm coming here too.
All right, thank you. Guys. Appreciate it. Okay, no one else and no one online.
No one online was.
Thank you. So we're going to close.
I'm sorry. We have a hand raised from a Kelly A.
Okay.
Kelly, if you wish to speak, can unmute yourself. Kelly, you appear to be on muted. If you can unmute yourself, we can allow you to speak.
Hello. Your unmute button just appeared on my screen. You just now unmuted me. For the last 30 seconds, you haven't unmuted me. So let's begin at that point. I just want to go down a list of things, kind of unusual ideas that the East County Board of Zoning Adjustments has oftentimes. This idea that if you pave everything, let's say you pave all 40 acres or 20 acres or whatever it is, then you can make the whole thing into a parking lot. That's okay, because the planning department or the code enforcement or the zoning board told you to go ahead and pave everything. Of course, that's not correct. You need a lot of permits to pave 100,000 square feet, which is what they did. And I don't know if they got any permits. So that's very unusual. Secondly, what's going on at the site? You know, usually what code enforcement does is show you pictures of a couple of corners,
in reality, if you look at Google, as of last April, they had about, 5 dozen cars parked all over. In the last 2 years, the southwest corner of the property has created a new parking lot.
Kelly,
dirt moving operation.
We can't hear you.
The old property been going on with dozens of car parks all along for many years.
So now we have two sets of parking lots as of last April instead of one. So really the parking situation is getting worse than ever. And if you just ignore what code enforcement tells you, just look at Google, you know, aerial satellite images, all you see is the situation is getting worse and worse with more and more junk cars. And also they have cargo containers and RVs parked all over the place, about 5 or 10 of them as of last April. So really, there's been no improvement. Code enforcement wants you to think that they've been working hard and making everything better and cleaning it up. Not at all. Not according to Google. So just double check what you hear. Open your eyes. Open your eyes.
Take a look at Google satellites, aerial images, and try to see what's going on. Code enforcement should actually be showing you the Google, but they probably don't because it's just too embarrassing for them. Thank you.
Thank you. We were able to read we got most of the message. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
No other hands raised.
Okay. So I just want to get clarification from, is it who?
Wade.
So you marked open forum. Is that when you wanted to speak? Because that had already closed. It was the first item on the agenda. Is there a particular agenda item you want to address?
Just like a general question is when we sometimes my friend get a neighborhood courtesy notice for starting the project, right? But how do I know what's the rent? I feel it's close to my home, but I didn't receive notice. So on the website, could we see any project? We can see the who will get the notice. Usually how many 10 miles or 5 miles of this project area, we don't know this.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to take that up with county staff directly. I think they could probably help you when we get a break here.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you very much. I think that's all I have as far as cards. So I'm going to go ahead and close this public comment period on this item. So let's see, couple things just to clarify for folks. We should just remind everybody that we have visited the site, this particular site. We've had a field trip out there, so we are aware of what the situation looks like. And then, quite frankly, code enforcement does a great job of providing us with photographs, and they get updated photographs all the time. So I feel like I'm still cognizant of the situation out there. Okay, so let's see. With that, anything else you want to have questions on?
Well, Jenna mentioned that she had applied for permits. Obviously, in the statement, it says there have been no permits or plans submitted. So I this is clarification on.
Yeah, when I did my staff report, that was on the 19th. And she's recently has done that, submitted it.
So it's post August 19th.
Yes.
Do you know what day the permit was pulled?
I think it was yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
There was no permit pulled. There was
inquiry.
An application.
So an application for approval, and that was August 28th. It's the date, which is today's date.
Okay.
There were corrections needed to the, as in a site plan. And some other materials that are normally required for a building permit.
Okay. And the 180 days expired on the 19th?
No. The 180 days was,
let's see, we met on the...
Was it January?
Yeah, we had... Yeah, so it was January 23rd was the...
It would have been the 23rd of the last month. But we didn't have a hearing until this month.
Yeah.
So that's why I came back to you.
So like it was around July 23rd was...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so... What I'm recollecting, and Michael, you did provide us with a copy of the minutes from that January meeting. Appreciate that. So we could remind ourselves of what exactly, how the conversation had gone. But I do recall, and it says in here that our intention was to allow them a year's worth of time to continue to make steady progress towards our end goal. And then we were reminded that we needed to check in every 180 days. That's why we set up the 180-day parameter. And I thank you for the information that they did not meet that 180-day deadline, but we do now, in fact, have some progress towards getting the permits. And there's an updated site plan that's been submitted.
No, it has not been submitted.
Okay. What was it you were referring to on the site plan?
The planner who reviewed the initial application came back and notified the applicant, in this case the respondent, that there are additional materials required for the building permit. And to date that has not been received.
Okay. So there's
additional
transactions going on though now between thank you.
Attending this morning, but you know.
So, did you have any?
I know one of the goals was to reach 20 vehicles. I drove by the property today, as well as looked at Mr. Peters' photos. I know there's a lot more than 20 out there. So, again, I don't know if we can open. And have the applicant or AJ respond to that.
Okay.
But that's one of my questions is not only, I mean, obviously we wanted the permit done a lot sooner. We obviously wanted to see progress being made. It doesn't seem like a lot of progress has been made the last 180 days. I just want to make sure we're on track of what we've asked to get done, to be done.
So I can reopen the public comment and then ask AJ to come forward. And are there any other questions besides the 20 vehicles?
That and the permits, like those were the two things that like really, I think were the two big things that we're really striving to achieve with the lenience on, on the violations. So.
Okay, so I'm gonna reopen Damien public comment and ask the applicant to come forward.
Okay. So remember when we found about I had to get rid of some cars. Remember on the side, it was the side. I did get rid of that. Actually, I'm down to like 10 cars on the side. Or less. What you ask me, because that's where we're going to be putting the ones that are in the front are the ones that run. Those are my cars that I ran. They all run. I can start them up right now. And those ones that I didn't make a room over there on the side where we're going to do the parking that I asked for that the structure, right? So I did get rid of a lot of cars, and I'm actually just keep going. I'm just getting rid of it. I'm going to get rid of a lot more.
Okay, you tell me from January to today, how many cars?
The cars that I'm getting rid of is the ones that don't run.
Right. Yeah. Can you tell me a rough estimate?
Probably another 10, 15, 10 cars if I have left that I'm going to get rid of no more. So I'm probably going to have 9 on that side. My goal is not to have anything on that side. It's just my driving one so I can put cement. I'm gonna put cement and put my driving cars on that side. It'll be my own personal, all of what I have left.
So were there 30 cars reduced from January to today?
Yeah.
But there's still
my running cars. I'm gonna keep. I have my running cars and my personal cars. You know, the hers, mine, all of us, and my daughters and stuff. But other than that, yes, the ones I'm gonna give is the ones that they're not running. I got to give them.
So the last time we met, you had said that would be, when you got it down to just those cars that you were going to properly store,
yeah,
it would be about 20 vehicles.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be down to only the first ones at the end. Now, I don't want cars that don't have to be building again. I don't want to build them. I'm actually going to be selling my building too, my building and the death zone. So a lot of it's going to go with that.
And do you have a date in mind? I mean, I know you can't tell us what the date of the sale is, but do you have
the cars for the cars?
The building is
right now that's in process. Oh, that's all going to go. Whatever's there is going. I'm not going to even. I'm going to take my couple lives I have and stuff to, you know, if we build a building over here later after that, then that's my goal. So I'm not only going to do a parking structure. I'm going to try to have a building like Ray's got a couple of buildings that I saw the way he did it, and I want to go and probably kind of follow that. You know what I mean? That's my goal too. That's what I'll be one permit and then another.
So the permit that Jen.
That's for a car, a parking garage, like a parking stall, right? That's what.
Yeah, so is that what you're referring to?
Yes, no walls on that. It's just parking.
It's like a pole barn.
You know, like the ones like in apartments, how they are? I'm going to go with that. And then that's parking on cement, you know, right? Do it right. And then I'm working on that building because I still have the building. I want to do one thing and then give the money that I get before I make up that building. So I'm going to make up a little bit. So I should be all right. And then I put all my driveways now are asphalt, are not asphalt. I put like real stuff. So it's a road all the way out. I don't know if it's south.
Yeah.
So it's going to be all the way to the front.
So the current application it's in is for a carport.
Carport, yes. For
and you're going to move the 20 vehicles that you plan to keep, you're going to park them in.
Yeah, a lot of them are going to go in there. They should fit a lot of them. And then in front of my garage, of course, but this is all cement area that it's not on dirt, you know what I mean? None of it.
Okay.
Yeah, the goal is to have at least 90% covered, so I don't have to worry about it either. We're all on the same page. I mean, simple as that.
So the buildings that your neighbor Ray has that you're interested in also constructing, you'll be putting one of those up?
I'm trying to get one. I have one that's almost probably almost close to size two.
And does that have sides on it?
Yeah.
That's an enclosed building.
That's an enclosed building, but I gotta go through the process first. So
right.
That's where I'm at.
So when would you expect that application to come in?
My goal is to take this one through. Just give me a 6 month span. Like that, I'll get this done at least to match that. If I get approved faster. Or I can get that done and then just go work because I'm just like I said, and that should give me time to get rid of my shop too and everything. Give me my money, whatever they're gonna do, you know. I'm not gonna make a lot, but at least it's gone. You know what I mean?
So once you get the permit for the carport, how long will it take to construct that?
As soon as I get the okay, I probably can do it as soon as possible. I mean, it doesn't take me long.
Is it a 30-day project?
I don't think it's a 30-day project. It could be if everything falls in place with the cement and everything. You know what I mean?
So your estimate.
And I got to be doing, so they're going to see, I got to do a small retaining wall because that side goes down. So it's got to be built up work and it's got to be a retaining wall. You got to have that by the pole. I can't go further than the electrical pole there. I got to have the room and it has to be so far from the fence. So it's just, I just need to know what I'm going to need and how much I'm going to need. That's it. And once I get the green light.
So once you got the permit, do you think it's a 6 month project?
Give me 6 months. Why am I going to go and say, give me 30 then I'm coming?
No. So I'm asking. So
yeah, give me 6 months.
So when you said give me 6 months, you were referring to get to finish the car for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we start doing the application for the other one once I know it's all financed.
And I think one thing is that even with this one, we wanted to have a hearing, but as long as things were moving along, we didn't have to have a hearing knowing that things were getting done.
Right.
Right. We were having that conversation.
Right.
To where, you know, I know working with planning department and building, it can take time. Mm-hmm. And it can't take time that they can't do anything for inspection and things like that. So, again, I think the intent from the start was to rectify this situation.
Yeah.
Have the landowner and occupant work with the county, making sure in a timely manner it's getting done.
Right. But I think we were instructed that we needed to stay within a 180-day.
I think that's what we discussed, the 180 days, with the asterisk of as long as things were being done, it didn't have to come back for a hearing to make sure they can just give us an update on what's being done.
So I think Michael probably brought it in because at the time he brought it on the agenda, there was no application for a permit.
Exactly.
Right. So you did what we asked you to do and you did
what
we're trying to do, what you're asking us to do. So, and there was some confusion, I remember last time, about some of our early instructions actually were a little bit then becoming contradictory with some other instructions. So I think the intent was to give them enough time to untangle all that. So do we have any other questions for anybody?
I do not.
Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and close public comment and see if we can take this to the next step. So that would be a motion.
Again, just talking through with staff as well.
Yeah.
I don't find could light, you know, fire under them. And I'm kind of disappointed that it took until yesterday or today to put these applications in. We've given a lot of leeway. I don't know if, and again, just I don't know if fining is gonna fix things. And again, what we're trying to do is get a resolution to this problem. I want to see this get done. I think everybody here wants to see this get done. I want it done right. I think the first steps have been taken now. Unfortunately, like I said, I'm a little disappointed it's taken 180 days. But you know, I believe in people, and I believe in this happening. So that's kind of where I stand on this.
Okay.
I'm not sure what kind of regulations we can put in if things aren't moving along. You know, whether we need to make this a, you know, 30-day, a 60-day check-in to making sure that whatever he's obligated to do is being done. And again, it could just be, you know, just filling us in. Like, on, you know, every meeting we're learning what's being done, what's not being done. And if things aren't being done, then that's why I think we start saying, okay, well, we have to start finding them in order to get stuff done. That was situation.
Okay. Well, the applicant's been pretty clear. He needs another 6 months to the best of his ability to estimate. He needs to take 6 months to get the carport in. Now that's from the time he gets the permit. So
yeah.
I don't know how far away we are from the actual permit. Sounds like there's some planning's going to need some information before they can issue a permit. Right, Damien?
Planning will need some information before planning can approve as to zoning a building permit request. The building permit is actually issued by the building inspection.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. So is what you're go ahead, Edward.
Oh, Ed LeBay, code enforcement manager. Yeah, so we are also disappointed that it took them to the very last second to submit an application. That wasn't the intent of your board for them to perform. The intent was for them to already have an issued permit, and I mean, I don't know what the delay was, but also the submission of application does not guarantee that the permit will be issued. I just want to note that, because it has to meet all the requirements, not just with planning but also building, and the timeline for that, as you know, if there's back and forth, it could take a while. And we just don't know the time frame. So, and also we have not performed any full inventory of the cars that are there. We don't know which ones are his, which ones are running. And paving also could be the issue. That we don't know if they've got permits from Zone 7 or anything to create those paved areas. So we need to tie all those things together and perhaps come up with a compliance agreement with serious timelines, benchmark dates that they need to perform. They fall out of one of them, we start playing. That's my suggestion.
Okay. Appreciate that. Thank you. I think the challenge I see with part of that, though, is they can't actually proceed without the actual permit. And that's the piece I'm still not getting a clear understanding of how long it'll take. And I know you can't predict it because it's going to depend on how they perform and bringing information in and what the particular circumstances are with the area that they want to pave. To your point, Zone 7 and others may not like that plan.
Can we just exactly kind of what you said. Can we set up a kind of an improvement plan of this is the timeline, this is what's required. As long as you're staying on the timeline, you're in compliance. Otherwise, we have the ability to assess fines once you fall out of compliance. Is that something we can administer or recommend?
The purposes of doing a compliance agreement letter is to set benchmark dates. We know that it's just an estimate. For example, if we say 3 months to have an issued permit, and during that, of course, we'll monitor their progress. If they're doing all they can to satisfy the permit and the holdup is on our side, we'll move that date with no issue. But if no action's been taken, planning department's been waiting, communicating, no response, then that's going to be an issue once the deadline comes. So I think in the previous hearing that we had, that we have the ability to continue or start assessing fines and fees once those benchmarks are not met.
And does the fee schedule, is that included in the agreement?
Yes, it will be part of it. Yes. Okay. I mean, we will do all we can to, you know, work with the owner, and as long as we know they're moving forward the way they're supposed to, and that's our goal too, is to get this thing done.
Yes.
It's been going on for way too long.
So that sounds like a productive way to get it moving. I think I do want to note though that they have continued to remove cars. I mean, to their credit, there is improvement. I know Ray's not seeing it, or it's not very apparent to the neighbor, but sounds like there is some progress being made, not as quickly, certainly not as quickly as we would like. So would you, let's see, maybe what we need to do is ask that code enforcement work with the applicant on a compliance agreement. Did you say that compliance agreement?
Yes.
Including a schedule of fees and fines, so they understand when those start to kick in and how much they're going to be. Is that reasonable?
I think the element of the compliance agreement is standard for us. We do include what the consequences are if compliance agreement is not met.
Okay, so it's clear in there that if you don't do this, you're going to get a $500 fine, whatever.
Yes.
Okay.
Or what the enforcement would be if compliance is not met.
Okay. So I'm inclined to do that.
I am too.
Yeah.
Can I ask some kind of
comment? Well, we public comment is closed, but you'll have an opportunity to work with them.
Very good. No, I got something else to tell you.
Very close.
Since you don't know why I took you this long.
Well, but that's okay. You can take that up with them offline.
Well,
that's okay. All right. So we have a motion to ask code enforcement to develop a compliance agreement and work with the applicant. And this compliance agreement will be with a time frame of 180 days. Is that the increment you usually?
I would defer to counsel on the limitations of providing another extension or.
Well, yeah, I think the compliance agreement would lay out the time frame. So
you could also declare that they are in violation.
Yes.
Okay. But the next step is to do this.
But if we agree that they're currently in violation and to get assessed a fee and a fine right now?
I think that's up to maybe we can get some advice from.
Sure. Aaron, do you want to add?
Sure.
Patient
of this. Aaron Fox, Deputy County Counsel. So the framework of the matter before you is that of an appeal of fines and fees that have already been assessed, and an appeal of the finding of a public nuisance on the property. And so what you're proposing is to continue that appeal hearing pending pending the establishment of a compliance agreement and pending the appellant's continued compliance with that compliance agreement. And so your outside date for coming back for completing the work would be 180 days, but staff would be able to bring this appeal back earlier than that if the compliance agreement is not complied with, in addition to assessing additional fines for subsequent violations. So I think that'd be the framework, but I would like to confirm with staff that works for them.
Yes, that would work for us. And if the compliance agreement is not met at any benchmark date, and we start assessing fines and fees that the property owner has the right to appeal those too.
So. Correct. Yeah. Gotcha.
So okay. I guess the only thing I would add, sorry, Aaron Fox for the Deputy County Council. The only thing I would add is that it may be beneficial to staff to create a deadline for the completion of the compliance agreement or some other threshold framework for that, because I get, you know, that could go on for 6 months as well. And so then there's not even an agreement to comply, let alone compliance being seen. And so your motion, I would recommend that your motion discusses how that compliance agreement works. Is it something that staff simply issues and the appellant has no input? Or is it something that the appellant and staff will discuss, but that staff will issue a final agreement with milestones regardless, you know, 30 days out? That's, I think, something you may want to spend a little time on.
Okay, thank you. So you're, with your experience, how long does it typically take? So two questions, actually. How long does it typically take? And then also, is this not a negotiation, but is this a discussion that you're having with the parcel owner to develop a compliance agreement that is feasible?
Yes, normally we would have a meeting with the property owner to come up with the benchmark dates that's reasonable on both sides.
Okay.
And we both agree to it. There's a section where we both signed the document, so it's pretty official.
Okay.
And we set the benchmark dates, but they're not 100% etched in stone. There's other things that could delay it. If it's reasonable, then we can adjust the dates and have both parties agree to it as well.
And you adjudicate that as you're moving your way through the agreement. Time's progressing, and you're watching whether they're meeting the benchmarks. And there's an issue that comes up where you feel like you need to adjust a date. You're the one who adjudicates that.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
And how long typically does it take for a compliance, like for you to put a program together for like this kind of app? Like, is that?
To put it together?
Yeah.
Might take us a couple weeks. Because, yeah, things are moving kind of.
So
next week we have a holiday.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So it's 30 days.
I'm not here next week.
Yeah.
So it's 30 days a reasonable?
Yeah, that would be reasonable.
Okay. So basically what we're doing, I think, is we've heard the appeal and we'd like to continue it for another 180 days with the condition that code enforcement is going to work with the property owner within a 30-day time frame to develop a compliance agreement. And then you're going to monitor that over this 180-day period. And if they fall out of compliance, you're going to bring it back to us right away.
We're going to start fines and fees.
That's right. You're going to start fines. Well, that's an agreement, right? You're going to start fines and fees.
They can appeal that.
And then that's a separate appeal process. Yeah. But you're not going to bring it in if they miss a benchmark date?
I don't think it's necessary. I mean,
okay.
If they know what the agreement is and they fall out of that, I mean, of course, we're going to listen to whatever
sure.
reasoning they have. And
so you don't
we'll
need to
try our best to kind of get that voluntary compliance.
And you don't need to come back to us what to assign those fees and fines because it's embedded in the agreement.
Correct.
And we're agreeing to that today because that's how we're continuing this appeal. Have that right.
Okay, what are you guys going to approve me? What is that? Do I get paid?
What's that?
What if you guys don't approve me? Do I get the money? Since I got paid, if I don't do it, if I don't do my part. What if you guys take longer than you should and then get in trouble? So, I just get,
well,
you know what I'm saying?
I understand, but you're going to work that with code enforcement and they have a track record for how to do these kinds of things. So does that thing?
No, that sounds like
motion.
Yep.
Did you get that, David?
Yeah. You're talking about.
So we're going to continue the appeal.
Continue the appeal hearing for another 180 days.
But
code enforcement to work with the respondent on coming up with a compliance agreement, and then if the respondent does not meet the benchmarks within certain time frames in that compliance agreement, code enforcement will institute fines and fees.
Yeah, according to the what's embedded in the agreement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Aaron Fox, UW County Council. Did you want to put a time frame on the compliance agreement becoming effective? A time.
Yes. So it sounds like that will be effective within 30 days.
Great. Okay.
Yeah. And that will be 30 business days because you've got holidays in there and.
Let's just say 30 business days.
Let's say 30 business days because you've got some vacation and holidays in there. In the next 30-day calendar day. So we're going to say 30 business days. Okay. So I move that.
Yeah. I second.
So we'll take a.
Okay. Chair Souza.
Aye.
Member Eddie.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you, code enforcement. Thank you. People came in and spoke to us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. We'll give you a link. Call me. We'll talk.
Okay. You'll work it all out. It'll be great. Okay. Alcohol beverage sale regulation administrative hearing.
There are no alcohol beverage sales items.
Okay. So item H is the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting.
I just had one question. No, kind of the end, the last paragraph, that we're assessing fines immediately. But I don't remember agreeing on the board clarified definitive or to fines to be assessed per day and not per truck. I know that was one of the discussions of if code enforcement is out there, because I believe it's $1,000 a truck.
Yep.
On top of the $1,000 a day?
Well, I think it was instead of assigning the fine or assessing the fine per truck, we were going to assess it per day.
So just $1,000 a day instead of $1,000 per truck?
Correct.
That's what we agreed upon?
Yeah, that's what Commissioner Imhoff and I were pretty emphatic about. I had one minor edit as well. It's on page 2, it's the third paragraph down, the very last sentence where it says, he suggested a compromise that allows staff to apply the fines in a legally defensible manner. And if it's okay with Aaron, I'd like to insert the word more, fines in a more legally defensible manner, because I think we had, in our discussion, we had agreed that it was at some level of defensibility, but we were looking for something more ironclad.
Can you, Aaron Foxley, Deputy County Council, would you mind pointing me to where you're looking again?
I'm on the second page, third paragraph down. It's the very last sentence. And the sentence begins, he suggested a compromise that allows staff to apply the fine in a legally defensible manner. And I'm asking for a minor edit to insert the word more in front of the word legally.
Sure. I mean, yeah, that was the nature of the comment.
It was the intent, yeah. And so with that edit, I would move that we approve the minutes.
I second with that modification.
Thank you. Do we need to roll call that?
Yes. The so that was to accept the minutes.
With the minor edit, yeah.
Great. Chair Saliza?
Aye.
Member Eddy?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Anything on the consent calendar?
Nothing on the consent.
Okay, so moving on to the regular calendar, we have a conditional use permit request.
Yes, this is PLN 2025-69. It's a modification of the previous conditional use permit, PLN 2017-201. And this modification is to the conditions of approval to allow the development to take place and it's generally on a smaller footprint. So this is the Sandville project takes place on the 15 parcels that are generally north of Interstate 580 and between Altamont Pass Road and Grand Line Road. The conditional use permit is to affect the modification PLN 2017-201 that would allow the applicant to increase the nameplate capacity for individual turbines from 4 megawatts up to 5.9 megawatts, and this project is follows an addendum to a previously certified subsequent EIR that was prepared, and the finding was that no changes to the approved project occurred that would trigger the need for further environmental review. The project was previously approved for 16 separate turbines. And the modification sought by the applicant would allow for up to 13 turbines. And again, with an individual increased generating capacity from 4 megawatts to 5.9 megawatts, as the megawatt capacity for the individual turbines increases, the applicant may decrease by up to 4 turbines the actual number of turbines for the project. So it could potentially be as low as 9 turbines, and this would include a one particular high risk site for the as well. So the Sandhill project site was reviewed through the Alameda County Wind Repowering Avian Protection Technical Advisory Committee, or referred to as the TAC. It was reviewed twice and this year, as the applicants have been working toward finding a final approved design that would minimize avian and bat mortality. So the draft avian bat protection plan will be subject to additional review at the TAC as this project progresses. This is just a quick visualization for the turbine dimensions, which which from the top are the ultimate turbine height, and then the hub height, the rotor diameter and the blade length, and as you can see, all of these didn't say that the project is the light blue in color, the middle color, which showed that it's within the approved ranges for each of these characteristics, including the rotor swept area. On the section on the bottom shows that in the rotor swept area for these individual turbines would be close to the maximum of the range considered. However, with the reduction of turbines, possibility of four turbines being reduced, the final cumulative rotor swept area would be much less than that. So the proposed turbine layout shown here includes the three locations shown in yellow, which are those locations which would be subject to removal should the final generating capacity be at the upper end of the proposed.
And there's turbines already here.
There are not.
Oh, okay.
There are not. It's approved for these, but there aren't any
in these locations.
Yeah, turbines located here. This is part of the repowering project where over 600 turbines were removed throughout this area.
Right.
And these are considered the replacement turbines under the repowering project.
But this is not where old or former turbines have been.
I think former turbines were in fact here.
Okay.
But I could look at it.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
I from the documentation, I thought they were.
Yeah. This location at the bottom here, it's shown in red here. That was the most problematic site as far as avian mortality, and it would be the first choice to be deleted deleted from the project should the applicant be able to increase the capacity of the individual turbines.
Okay.
There was today there was a communication received from say Mount Diablo regarding the rotor swept area and avian mortality and also about how the access road widths would need to increase to accommodate larger turbine. So staff does recommend that the board, after accepting the staff report and taking public testimony, to adopt the attached resolution with the file that is basically the same resolution as previously approved, except for the authorization and the timeline for ultimate review, which is 10 years. That the timeline there would be from today's date rather than 3 years ago, and also that the again the 30-year project timeline is also from today's date.
Okay.
Great, and that concludes staff presentation.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
What in the 10-year review? What does that look like? Is it? I mean, is it? Are they still collecting data of like avian, mortality? I mean, obviously they're not going to take out these turbines in 10 years. So how's that kind of look like?
And part like one of the conditions under one of the conditions the project would have a technology used. There's a few products already in use, including Identiflight, the smart technology, as you know, that also is connected to the system, so that the turbine speeds be reduced in times of high mortality. And the review would also include a view of the effectiveness of that technology, whichever system is used.
So within that 10-year period, there's periodic reviews about how effective these methods are to protecting the wildlife.
Yeah, within that first 10 years and beyond, there's constant data collection by the consultants who are hired by the applicant, as well as I believe a consultant who works for the county as well, and those results are subject to periodic review at the TAC, the TAC meeting, and then would also be part of the 10-year mandatory.
Okay.
And is the Identiflight, is that being used on these current turbines, or is that just new technology that they're putting onto the
used to?
So there has not been a decision whether to use Identiflight or not. I know it is in use for at least one other project but the applicants are still reviewing other possibilities as well.
But if they didn't use that particular technology, there would be some other mechanism they'd be using for monitoring.
Yes.
Yeah, and to control the turbines.
Oh, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be connected with
that. Because that one actually will stop the turbines from turning when they detect movement, wildlife movement. And then they've got periods of time, when the birds are very active and the bats, and they slow them down. So I can see the turbine there. And they stop sometimes, like, oh, must be an eagle. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, should I open it up for public?
Yes.
Okay, so let's go and open it up for public comment. Just check it. Oh, go ahead.
The two applicant representatives are here.
Oh, perfect. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Anybody online wants to address us?
Yes. Yes, there's Stephen Pascalis. If you would like to speak, and then we also have William Hopps.
Yeah, hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Good afternoon. My name is Stephen DePosley, and I'm our land use advocate at Save Mount Diablo. We're a nationally accredited land trust founded in 1971, and our mission is to preserve Mount Diablo's peaks, foothills, watersheds, and the greater 200-mile Diablo Range through land conservation, habitat restoration, and advocacy. So we've had a long history of involvement in land use issues in the Altamont Pass, and we actually submitted detailed comments on an earlier environmental review for wind energy repowering here back in 2014. And at that time, we raised concerns about avian mortality, especially with golden eagles, and suggested strategies like micro-siting turbines to reduce collisions. Today, we want to emphasize that land conservation is a crucial and effective mitigation strategy. Research continues to confirm that the Altamont Pass is a population sink for golden eagles. Protecting and managing habitat through conservation easements or land acquisition would help offset those losses and help ensure that these raptors have the food sources and safe habitat that they need to persist. This approach can complement technological fixes and provide lasting benefits for wildlife. We also want to stress that we see ourselves as partners in this work. Save Mount Diablo has expanded its conservation focus throughout the Diablo Range, and we're eager to collaborate with stakeholders and experts and other decision makers on solutions that balance renewable energy goals with the protection of these wildlife populations. So in short, we're just asking that land-based mitigation strategies be given serious consideration in this project and that the cumulative impacts across the Altamont Pass continue to be evaluated. So thank you for your time, and we look forward to staying engaged with these discussions moving forward.
Thank you.
We have William Hopps.
Wait a minute. Okay. How is that?
Good.
Okay. I'm Bill Hoppus. I'm the president of Ohlone Audubon Society. And thank you for the opportunity to comment on this project. We're continuing our review of it and have not taken on a position on it going forward yet. But there are four areas that we are looking at very closely. One is we're very concerned about the any additional megawatts in the Altamont area and its impact on take, and whether that improves the county's commitment and obligation to reduce golden eagle strikes and deaths in the Altamont. We are interested in seeing, I know there's references to TAC, and we've heard those today, recommendations, but we hope to review those recommendations, and more importantly, that the county adopt those regulations if this project goes forward. We've seen too many cases in the past where TAC makes recommendations and the Planning Commission simply ignores them. We recently completed a major effort on the Mulqueeny project, and we're looking and reviewing mitigation measures in this project to ensure that they are consistent with what the Mulqueeny project agreed to. And along that line, and it's been discussed a little bit here earlier, we're looking for operational plans in this project that minimize bird strikes, and we look forward to reviewing those. So thank you for the opportunity to comment on it. We're still reviewing it, and we'll certainly have more to say on it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
That concludes the folks online.
One of the windiest onshore sites in California. Therefore, that's why this is one of the first sites to receive a lot of turbines 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. The nameplate capacities for US land-based wind turbines has grown about 6% per year over the last 40 years, and the industry trend has been towards much larger capacity turbines. Most modern turbines that are over 4.3 megawatts, which is most of the range. If you go above 4.3 megawatts. Remember, we have a range here of 4 to 5.9. Most of that range, everything above 4.3, requires a hub height of well over 110 meters, between 115 and 130 meters. This is like a powerhouse. Imagine you're building a dam, they got a powerhouse, and inside the powerhouse there are turbines, they do water, but whatever. Don't just pick it up. And imagine that you had technical people, technical advisories, planners, technical experts and applicants, and they came and told you this is the size of the door in the powerhouse. And the door, it turns out, is too small, because when you make the turbines bigger, you need a bigger door to fit them in. So if you're going to make anything above 4.3, all of the models that are available for sale in the United States, mainly by GE, whatever it is, Vernova and Siemens, Gamesa, anybody. And once you go over this, well, once you go over 4.3 megawatts, up to 4.5, 5, 5.5, you need 115 meters or more, up to 130 meters of hub height. I'm really concerned that we're not going to achieve the great advancements, and we're not going to be able to get to the forefront of wind turbine technology, where we are some of the largest and most efficient, if we don't give them more hub height and get them up, authorize them for 115, 120, 100, I'd say 130, no more than 130, and give them the room that they need so that they can do all of these megawatts. Remember, they have an entitlement of 50 megawatts. Divide that by what, 9? That's what, over 5 megawatts per turbine? You're not going to get 5 megawatts per turbine if you don't give them the hub height that they need. It really, I'm really concerned that they need the technical expansion here. By the way, the cost is around $1.4 million per megawatt. So each one of these things is going to cost $5.5 million. And let's not make any stupid mistakes where we kneecap them and they don't have the room that they need to build what they have to build.
Thank you. No other public comment. Okay, so I'm going to close public comment because that still leaves the applicant open to talk to us, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So just want to be clear, based on the couple of things that Bill Hoppus mentioned, that, or maybe it was even say Mount Diablo, but we're not the body that would address the issue. It was say Mount Diablo. We're not the body that would address issues about conservation. Like they're going to, if there's requests to conserve any of the land up in that region, they're going to take that to a different body.
Yeah, that's often considered when the conditional use permit is under review. Like that would have been under the previous permit.
Yeah.
In this case, the applicant is just asking for a modification to the conditions.
Yeah.
Within the same project capacity as far as.
Yeah, I think he's referring to adjacent parcels, adjacent to this land that's been identified for the turbines. But I mean, just clarifying that we're not the body they would bring that to.
Correct.
Okay.
It could be part of the environmental document that the board might certify, but that's not part of the application.
Right. Okay, thank you. So do you have any questions or did you want to let me open it up to Yeah.
Good afternoon, Chair. Board members and county staff and the public today. Here today, my name is Jorge Tapia. I'm with Salca Energy. Salca is a California-based renewable energy developer that has been active in Alameda County since 2016. Our main focus is to repower old legacy projects and replace them with fewer, more efficient turbines and still provide clean, renewable energy to the state of California to meet its goals. In 2021, we successfully repowered the Summit Wind Project, now operating as the Scott Haggerty Wind Center. And beyond Summit, our management team has developed over 1,000 megawatts of wind across North America. So we feel we're in a really good place to deliver the best possible outcome for this project today. And here today, on behalf of Todd Hopper, the applicant of record, our director of development, we work closely together. And as Damian mentioned, the amendment itself is reduce the number of turbines by allowing them to operate at a higher capacity. Physically wise, they're the same turbines. And here to also address any questions that the board may have.
So are you concerned with the issue that Mr. Abreu brought up about the height of the hub?
Yeah. Right now, I appreciate that concern at this point. Right now, the measurements that are specified in the staff report, based on our expert consultants, they satisfy all the requirements based on all kind of engineers and environmental concerns. Right now, those descriptions that are in the document, the staff report, satisfy everything that, that we need at the moment.
Thank you.
No,
What is will be the decision point for you to get to the 9 turbines rather than the 13?
Well, we're just trying to be more efficient. These turbines can operate within a range.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to maximize the ability to reduce the environmental impact and reduce the footprint, because by using less turbines, we can still get to our approved megawatt capacity of 50 megawatts, and that could be a benefit for the environment and air balance.
So will that decision be made, though, as you're constructing these new turbines? If you're starting to get the efficiency that you're looking for, you'll stop and not put the last 4 in?
Correct.
So that's kind of how you're...
Yes.
Your plan of construction.
Right. Right now, without the approval itself, it's difficult to say how many can go in. But yes, ideally, we want to reduce the environmental emissions and be the most efficient also.
Sure.
So 50 megawatts is what you're really looking for. That,
yeah,
that,
right. That's our cap.
That's not growing.
That's not growing right now. 50 megawatts.
In there right now, 16. It's going to be the same now. That it's just.
Right. Everything added up, total 50. If it's less capacity, then we have to do more, but ideally higher capacity, less turbines, and the same goal will be at 50.
So is TAC an advisory body, or is it, do they have jurisdiction? I mean, if they make recommendations, especially regarding the protection of the wildlife, does that obligate the applicant to do those things, or is it just an advice? It's advisory.
Well, projects are subject to review by the TAC as part of the conditions of approval. And the TAC body made up of biologists from the Fish and Wildlife and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and other agencies their review is does affect what the developer would actually install, and then also how and then it would affect the operations, I believe, going forward.
But do they have the authority to force the applicant to use a particular technology, or is it just advisory?
Oh, so they don't force the applicant to use a certain one technology over the other. The applicant proposes, and then there's a review of a certain technology, and then both prior to installation and then during the post commencement of operation, when there's an evaluation of
I could add to that a little bit. So the TAC, they are advisory to the county, after the construction, there's a 3-year initial monitoring for bird and bat, and they have to do a avian and bat protection plan that also the TAC approves. And a lot of that's where they get into the detail about identified or any kind of curtailment at night for bats. And so the TAC that's the hat that they wear when they're at the TAC, but many of the staffers are actually state and fed, and they're the ones that are issuing take permits and, these sort of big state and federal permits. And so they kind of have, they kind of get two bites of the apple in a way.
Yeah.
But when they're the county TAC, they're advising us, but then also they may be dealing with the applicant on the backside or take permits.
Okay.
And that's when they would probably get into the details also potentially of curtailment and even potential land mitigation that was mentioned by one of the speakers.
Okay.
Potentially. Although I don't know that, I'd have to look and double check to see if any of our current wind farms have had to buy like a mitigation lands.
Right.
Nothing's kind of coming to mind right now, but yeah. That potentially could be on the table.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because one of the applicants did mention that, or alluded, or at least the way I heard it was, the county didn't implement what TAC wanted.
So they were encouraging county to follow all TAC's recommendations, but I don't have any history about whether they did or not.
And it's more of a collaborative approach, I think. They're not regulatory.
Yeah.
They can't tell an applicant what to do, but they can advise the county, and so that is something that we certainly want to be able to, if they have real concerns about something, we'll try to follow through with the applicant. And right now there's two operating wind farms, Mulqueenie, which you saw like a year ago, kind of went through the same thing where they wanted to upsize their turbine, so they came and asked for the amendment to the use permit. So this project is doing the same thing.
Yeah.
As you probably would guess, the technology is always getting better. Turbines are getting bigger and with more output. And so it makes sense that, we would be able to allow for that. I'll say there's two operating wind farms. Mulqueenie is the third. This will be the fourth. So right now that's kind of all that's in our process. There isn't any others that are out on the horizon, at least not that more.
Okay.
But that could change. I also understand that the tax credits are also not dependable right now. So there's some sense of urgency.
All right, thank you. Any other questions?
No,
thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess I would move we improve.
I second that.
So to approve the project is recommended by staff.
It's recommended by staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, could you also approve the CEQA document?
Oh, yes.
Part of the motion, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so we move to approve that as well.
That's determining that the prepared CEQA addendum adequately addresses project changes and approve the project modifications with findings and amended conditions of approval, ELM 27-22.
That's correct.
Okay. Great.
So moved and seconded.
Yep, second. Chair Eddy?
Aye.
Oh, sorry. Chair Sandy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Aye.
Member Eddy?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Very good. Thank you, Damien. All right. I think with that, any staff comments and correspondence?
Only that next for next month there won't be as with this month there won't be an early hearing. There will be one on September 25th.
Yep.
And then Council Foxworthy will be giving a training for board members as well.
Okay. During the regular session.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Get excited.
I am. We're going to do our homework.
All right.
And then finally, any board announcement, comments, or reports?
Just any update on the Flynn Road dumpings? I know, I live out there and I have neighbors that send me photos and say it's still happening. So I just want to know if there's anything on the county side that's progressively, trying to get this stopped.
Yes, I will I'll ask code enforcement too.
I actually asked Michael earlier, and he said those abatement report or orders did go out.
Okay.
Yeah, so those parcel owners have been notified of their need to abate right away. So I don't know if that satisfies.
I just curious.
Yeah, me too. And so with that, I'm going to adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So you guys forget.
Brown Act.